Hello and welcome to the 47.5 Minutes of Heaven we call the D1 Baseball Podcast. I am your host, Michael Patrick Rooney, joined by Kendall Rogers and Aaron Fitt. Gentlemen, we have a special guest today. Before we bring in our special guest, how are we doing? Good morning. Good afternoon. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. You?
Good. Fitzy?
Good day to you, Runes. It's always a pleasure when I get to see your shiny head on my screen.
Fitzy, quick aside. If you keep posting golf scores like we're seeing recently, are we at risk of you joining like the Corn Ferry Tour, or are you going to save yourself for the Senior Tour? Do we have a strategy around that?
The way I see it, I got 11 years to get my game in shape, and as soon as I turn 50, I'm going pro. Let's do this.
Like
you. You need to fly to Nebraska and be Teddy Peterson's partner.
We could all learn a few things from Teddy P. Teddy P can swing it.
Yes. Well said. Gentlemen, we have a special guest. We're going to start to do some coach interviews as we head into the offseason, or we stay in the offseason. So we have got new Texas A&M skipper Jim Schlossnagel. Obviously, Schloss spent 18 years, the last 18 years at TCU, took the Horned Frogs to Omaha 5 times. Schloss, we know you are very media savvy. We grade you out as an 80 on the media scale. So we thought you'd be the first best guest. How are we doing, Schloss?
I'm doing great. Thanks for the high grade. I'm not sure that's warranted, but I'll take it.
That's right. Any 80 grades we can get. Hey, so here's our format before I'll give you guys the format, and then I want to do our sponsor read, and then we'll get into it. So the format's going to go like this. We'll each ask Schloss a question, and then he gets to return the favor. He gets to attack the media and ask one of us a question. And, I think obviously he'll probably direct all his questions at Kendall. I think that's the best course of action. But all kidding aside. So that, we'll have a little twist there. So Schloss will get to be the question asker too. So before we do that, let's do the business. Today's podcast, as always, brought to us by our good friends at Driveline Baseball. Driveline offers a variety of training, education, software, and hardware solutions for both players and coaches. Coaches, if you are overwhelmed by collecting different data sources, mass athlete programming, third-party analytic insights, here's what you do. Call or email into support@drivelinebaseball.com. Get yourself set up with a custom player development bundle on Driveline's Track platform. You can also look into Driveline certification. That will empower you to run Driveline-type training, pitch design, and or biomechanical data collection with products like Modus. So always appreciate our friends at Driveline. So Schloss, I'm going to kick us off here. So I think of you as kind of this neat combination of new school coach, but you've got the program building qualities that the previous generation of coaches I've looked up to so much. So this will be kind of your third go at that. You got things humming really quickly at UNLV. Then, you did what you did at TCU, which was incredible. And now you're going to take over A&M. I'm curious for you, maybe not talking about the specific details of those three places, but how are you different? The program builder you were when you went to UNLV compared to who you are now?
Well, certainly, number one, thanks for having me on. I had a great mentor in Rick Jones at Tulane, where I was able to watch him build a program, kind of resurrect a program per se, and do it in the shadow of what Coach Burtman was doing at LSU in the 90s. And so, first and foremost, I had a great mentor that way, and I got to see it up close and personal, especially at a high cost of attendance private school, which really helped me, when I got to TCU. I think that how am I different now? 20 years experience as a head coach, certainly have screwed up so many things. And just like a player on the field, you learn from that. And of course, watch what other people do. I don't have a whole heck of a lot of hobbies. I study coaches. I went to football practice here yesterday to watch Jimbo Fisher do his thing. But I'm a big college baseball fan. So just, watching what the other great college coaches have done, like Mike Bianco at Ole Miss, obviously Tim Corbin at Vanderbilt, those guys are lifelong friends. So just modeling some of those things and then trial and error as we go along. But first and foremost, it's going out and hiring really good people. And when you hire super successful and talented people like a Randy Mazie or Kirk Sarlos or Bill Mozziello, you know, and Todd Whitting, so forth. Then, you know, you have great teammates in that, in the process of building a great program and of course doing it for a university that's committed to that, that wants to do it. If the school doesn't want to do it and isn't committed to doing it, then the coach is going to hit a ceiling. And luckily at TCU, especially every time we had some level of success, the question was, what do we need to do next? And when you have the resources and the want to go do that, then that's a great situation to be in.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll talk so much about A&M Schloss, but, you know, you haven't had a lot of time. It's been a kind of a whirlwind since you arrived in, but just kind of looking back at your days at TCU and, you know, being there for 18 years, having a lot of great memories, what's maybe the one thing as you kind of reflect on the career in Fort Worth that you kind of look back to and that you always kind of remember? For me, it's kind of like I've been to so many big moments in TCU baseball over the last two decades. I kind of think back to the Brian Holiday home run at UT. He got you guys to Omaha. I guess what's the one moment you kind of think back to when you reflect in your TCU days? Because, you know, on the same breath that it's exciting for you to go to A&M, it's also bittersweet because you guys had a lot of great memories in Fort Worth.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I love and adore TCU. I still do and always will. I raised my family there. Both my children go to school there. I'll always be a fan of anything and everything Horned Frog, no doubt about it. And I like to say that, you know, I didn't leave there to take a better job. I left to take a different job, completely different profile of university, completely different conference, you know, stuff like that. Obviously in the same state, but the two moments that stand out to me would be, number one, just what you said, game three in Austin, 2010, 2009, we were in game three at the exact same place, against Coach Garrido and his great teams. And that was our first time ever to a super regional. And then the very next year, we're right back in the same spot playing game three. And this time, you know, Kyle Winkler pitched his tail off and Aaron Schultz and Brian Holiday hit the two big home runs to get us to Omaha. And then I think the second moment for me would be in 14 when we hosted a super regional and we won against Pepperdine to go to the College World Series from our own park. And just seeing the fan base and how excited everybody was. And, of course, that started us on a run of, you know, four straight trips to Omaha. And so those would be the two biggest moments in my mind.
I noticed you didn't throw in that 18-inning A&M game in there.
Yeah, I mean, there were 16-inning games against A&M. We had a 22-inning game against Sam Houston State, which a lot of people talk about, but they forget we played 11 innings the night before against Siena and won on a walk-off Boomer White single. Yeah. So, there was a lot of moments in there. North Carolina State being down 8-1 with two outs in the bottom of the eighth and winning the game. So, you know, the Florida State game in Omaha where Matt Curry's grand slam, in 2010. So, yeah, awesome moments. Awesome.
I was just thinking about that Matt Curry game today. I was wearing this morning a shirt from the 2010 World Series. And that's one of the moments from that World Series that sticks out most to me, you know, that, just the electrifying, one of the most electrifying moments that I remember at Rosenblatt Stadium. But, there's so many. I mean, you created so many memories over the course of 18 years there. And I'm one of the things that I find fascinating is, you know, the quality of this rivalry that was built up between TCU and A&M and how interesting it is that you're all of a sudden on the other side of that rivalry. But I mean, I'm kind of curious for your perspective on the evolution of that dynamic, the TCU A&M baseball dynamic. You guys had so many memorable battles over the years. First of all, is there one battle that sticks out most to you? And secondly, how do you kind of put that rivalry into perspective now that you're on the other side?
Well, the moment would have, you know, obviously the biggest moment would have to be winning that, you know, the walk-off against Texas A&M and the 16-inning game and then coming back here the next year and Boomer being on the, you know, being on the other side of the field and winning game three here, Brian Howard pitching so well and Durbin Feltman closing it out. But we, you know, there were others. Of course, you know, in 2012, we won a regional here, beat A&M during the course of that, and then had to beat Ole Miss twice and did that. Played A&M in the College World Series in 17. Played them in the Minute Maid Classic in a 15-inning game that lasted till 2:30 in the morning. So, you know, that's one of those things that just seemed like, you know, the bounce of the ball, you know, the sport of baseball, you know, it just, for some reason, it favored us during those moments. And I think Coach Childress did such a phenomenal job here, going to 13 straight regionals, College World Series twice. You know, if the ball bounces a couple different ways in 15 and 16, you know, then it's a completely different story for Texas A&M and for TCU. But, you know, I think, you know, there's so many Eric Hyman, the athletic director that hired me at TCU, ended up as the athletic director at Texas A&M. And he was on the baseball committee. So there was some political heat. You know, we ended up being a national seed and A&M wasn't. And he took a lot of heat for that. So, you know, there's definitely been a lot. And I think before my time at TCU, when A&M and TCU were in the Southwest Conference, I've seen some videos of some pretty good bench clearing brouhahas. So, you know, it's we're only about two hours and 15 minutes apart. But there's certainly been some, you know, amazing moments. And I'm interested to see, you know, what it looks like from the other side. And, you know, the way baseball normally works in this life, it usually comes full circle. So I would rather not play TCU. I would rather just root for TCU. But we'll see what happens over the course of the next several years.
Love it. All right, Slosh, you're up. Pick a victim.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, I'm going to go I'll go Kendall Rogers. Outside of present company, your favorite current college coach to interview and your favorite retired or former coach to interview?
Ooh, great question.
Ooh. Well, so you're excluded on this question, by the way.
That's right.
Well, I'm not nearly as entertaining as Coach Martin or, you know, some of those old country Tim Tadlock. So
I would say Tadlock is in the conversation. I think for me, though, and it's funny because Aaron lives in North Carolina, so he actually talks to him more often than I do. But, like, I can sit there and talk to, like, Elliot Avent all day long. Like, I just think his personality is fantastic. He's very honest. That's one thing I like about a lot of coaches, including yourself, that you're very honest about things. And I've always just appreciated kind of his personality. I'll throw Tadlock in there. I kind of go back, and I'm gonna give him some grief here, but I go back to the fall. And this is the fall that Gabe Holt was a freshman. And he went through all the players on the team and everything like that. Well, opening weekend, second weekend, I see Tech and Shriners. And there's this guy named Gabe Holt who's, like, hit 450 that weekend. So I'm like, this guy wasn't even in my fall report. So I go talk to Tadlock afterwards. And I'm like, hey, like, why didn't you mention this guy? He just smiled at me and walked off. So I always give him grief for that. He didn't even tell me who Gabe Holt was.
Carl Lewis.
My boss, that guy.
Yeah exactly. Former coach for me. I mean, everybody loves talking to Mike Martin, but, you know, I'll be honest with you. I really enjoyed Augie Garrido, and him and Mike, totally different. There's a little bit more of a dry humor with Augie, but, you know, you could start talking to Augie and you would be talking to, and then all of a sudden you'd be talking about the 1988 presidential election and, oh, global warming after that. So, like, you could go so many different ways with Augie, but when it comes down to the mental game of baseball, to me, there was no better coach to talk to about it than with Augie. And I think the results kind of speak for themselves in that regard.
Outstanding. No doubt about it.
That's awesome. Hey, Slosh, this is not my question, but Kendall's answer triggers it. And when you guys beat Texas in 2010, do you remember what Augie said to you when you guys did the handshake after the final game?
Yeah, he wasn't very happy.
oh, that's vintage.
No, but it wasn't anything bad. He just said congratulations and kept going. I remember, you know, I was hoping to hear something more than that, because the year before, you know, when we lost game 3 and they struck out Jason Coates to end the game. I remember, I just have such reverence for guys like Coach Garrido, because the whole reason that, I mean, I'm sitting here in this beautiful ballpark, the whole reason we have college baseball the way it is today is because of guys like Coach Garrido, Coach Martin, Coach Johnson here at Texas A&M and so forth. So I just remember saying, Coach, I appreciate all you've done for our sport. The whole reason I even have a job at TCU is because of you. And he said, thanks and good luck in Omaha. But now Coach Garrido, in the last 5 or 6 years of his life, he literally treated me like a former player or former coach. He was a great mentor. In 2015, we won the Big 12, I think going away, and we were the number one seed in the Big 12 tournament, and we went 2 and out, and we lost a 9 a.m. game to Texas Tech, and I'm getting on the bus and wondering, what in the world just happened. And as soon as I turned my phone on, I already had a text message from Coach Garrido that said, this is the absolute best thing that could ever happen to your team. We'll see you in Omaha. Go home, get rest, and get your team ready. And that's awesome. Instantly changed my perspective. So, he's a very special man.
That's great. Hey, Schloss, let me ask you this question, and I want to use it as a, I want to talk about your coaches, your assistant coaches. And, when I go back to your days at UNLV, obviously your good friend, our good friend, Buddy Goldsmith, just suffered an incredible tragedy. His son, Garrett, died suddenly in the last few weeks. And, Buddy, if you're listening, you are in our thoughts and prayers. And to me, Buddy Goldsmith is one of my favorite people in baseball. And, I think about Schloss as we talk about coaches. Buddy was your assistant at UNLV. He becomes a head coach. Randy Mazey becomes a head coach. Todd Winning becomes a head coach. Kirk Sarlos now a head coach. You've had so many of those guys become head coaches that you've been with. And I think one of your signatures is you've hired these really talented assistant coaches. And I think that looks easy on paper, but it's tricky because if you're going to hire people of that ilk, you've got to give them autonomy. But at the end of the day, it's your name on the letterhead, right? Like the wins and losses will go next to your name. So I'm curious your philosophy on balancing, hey, I have very strong beliefs that I want implemented in my program, but I also want to give these really talented assistant coaches as much rope as they need to for their talents to come out.
Yeah, no doubt about it. To hire people like that, you have to be at a place that's going to give you the resources to be able to hire them. That's the first thing. And then identifying that. And I keep a running list on my phone of, potential pitching coaches, potential, infield, whatever. I'm not afraid to hire, some people are afraid to hire somebody that in 2 or 3 years, maybe will move on to be a head coach. To me, that just helps us hire the next guy. So I'm not afraid of that. I do believe that, I have, my job is to run the program, certainly coach the team, but it's also to help develop coaches. And just like you said, within the confines of the core values and the mission statement that we have had at all of those places is to sit, which we're getting ready to go on a coaches retreat next week for 3 days. And we're going to talk about everything from how we recruit to how we dress in practice to bunt defense. And I want to, I've got Nolan Kane from LSU. I got Nate Yeske from Arizona and Oregon State. You got Michael Early from Arizona State, Jason Hutchins, who's been here. A guy named Chuck Box, who's been a 6 or 7 time state champion high school coach. I want to hear from all those guys. And then we'll come out of that with our plan as to how we're going to do things. And I certainly don't have the answer to everything. I know the way I'd like, there's some things they're non-negotiable, right? Like the core values of our program and what we're going to stand for. But everything else, if there's a better way to do it, let's do it. I have no ego in this thing whatsoever. I see every job as this. I see everybody's role as equal, whether it be the equipment manager, the third baseman, assistant coach, head coach. We all just have different responsibilities. And so you go just like recruiting, you go recruit the best player, you go recruit the best coach, you give them every tool they need to be successful. And then just like I'm held accountable to that, hold them accountable. And when you have guys like Mazey and Kirk and Mo and, Buddy and Matt Siegel, Todd Whitting, you know, guys that have gone and had just Tony Vitello, guys that have gone on and had amazing success, then it would be completely stupid of me to stand in their way. I'm just trying to navigate the ship and have them do what they do best.
Yeah, I guess kind of looking at A&M now, I mean, when you arrived, I mean, obviously it's a much different program. It's quote unquote a bigger brand, bigger school, bigger alumni base. But what is, when you look at things from a specific kind of baseball standpoint, what is maybe one thing that surprised you in like a good way? And maybe what's one thing you kind of look at with the program that you're kind of like, okay, you know what, this isn't exactly where I'd want it to be. What's kind of the difference between those two?
Well, the good thing, number one, is just what an unbelievably what a great school this is academically. You know, I've been in a private school for 18 years and certainly sold that private school degree. I had never really kind of dove into what, you know, this place being one of the top 10 public universities in the world. And then also just the power of the brand of this school. 71,000 students, over 500,000 former students. You know, we don't call them alumni here; it's former students. I'm learning all these traditions, and just the global power of that. Whether it be a donor base, you pick up the phone and and call somebody, and they're an Aggie or they know someone who is. So that has been. I knew it was strong. I had no idea, and I'm still learning that. Something that we have to get better at. I mean, to me, in 2012 was the first year of this stadium. It was as good as there was, if not the best. I remember quoting myself, I said, I felt like this was the best pure college stadium in the country. There were some other ballparks that looked more minor league, like a minor league setting to me, and they're beautiful. I thought this one was the best for on campus. And just in 8 or 9 years in our own division, of the SEC, not just the SEC, but the SEC West. You've got LSU, you got Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Alabama, Arkansas, that have either done brand new ballparks or massive renovations. And so, one of the things that attracted me to being here that Runes touched on earlier is I do consider myself kind of I like those kind of projects. I like the building aspect of things. And I want to be real careful because it's not like I inherited a bad program. Like Coach Childress, you know, amazing, amazing what he did here over the course of his time. And now, you know, Ross Bjork having only been here for 2 years and he was at Ole Miss with Mike and he saw what big attendance and big atmosphere and big brand can do. Just my own opinion, if you can draw 12 to 14,000 people in Oxford, Mississippi or Starkville, Mississippi, at Texas A&M, if we put a good product on the field and we renovate a ballpark that can seat that many people, I don't understand why that can't happen here. When we have 70,000 students, we're an hour away from Houston, Texas. So that's going to be the exciting thing. I think we have to catch up from a facility standpoint in a ballpark that's only 9 years old. And we're in the process of doing that. That's why I'm doing our interview up here in the stadium instead of my office, because they're tearing up carpet and repainting. But that's an exciting part for us.
I've seen the renderings of what you guys are trying to do. What are you guys looking at as like the top line capacity for that? Because they haven't really listed capacities in that pamphlet.
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on what design we go with. I think everything's on the table. Certainly want to create outfield seating. Certainly want to create kind of a 360 opportunity, like similar to Mississippi State, where you could walk in the ballpark and literally walk the concourse all the way around and really never lose sight of the game. I think extending the upper deck is out there. Ross is open to anything. We've already met with an architectural firm. They're going to come back to us before the summer's out with some of their ideas. But we have things to do for the fans to expand seating and their experience and high-end, luxury boxes and clubs and stuff like that. And we also have things to do for the players. We're planning on building a full indoor facility similar to what, Arkansas has set the standard for that, and all new things for the players. So, we want to do both for the fans and for the players.
Coach, I want to take another step backwards, but I want to go farther back this time. I love, you know, hearing your stories over the years about the early days of your coaching career, you know, Elon days, the Clemson days, especially, you know, that year, what year plus maybe you spent with Coach Leggett and how you got your foot in the door there. It's a perfect story of perseverance and just drive for a young guy. I'm wondering if you could share that with our listeners and just kind of share your overall recollections from, you know, your time with Coach Leggett down there.
Well, I graduated Elon in 1992, and I was planning on going back to Elon to NAIA school at the time, and they were going to pay for my grad school and give me a place to live, and that would have been the first assistant coach, paid assistant in some form that they've ever had, and I said, that's great. I'm going to go work camp this summer, I think 6 or 8 weeks at Georgia Tech with Jim Morris, and then 3 weeks at Clemson, and Jack was assistant coach then. Bill Wilhelm was the head coach, legendary coach, been there for, I think, 37 years. And right in July 1st, all this legislation came down. Scholarships went from 13 to 11.7. And they created this new, they changed coaching staffs and created a thing called a restricted earnings coach. And then this new thing called a volunteer coach. And which was a horrible day for a lot of coaches because they lost their job or, you know, because they didn't want to work for free. But for a 21-year-old guy that was working camp and running the pitching station at Clemson, it was a great day because in the very last day of my very last week of camp at Clemson, Coach Wilhelm called me in the office and said, we have this new thing called a volunteer coach. Would you be willing to come help me coach the pitchers? And I hadn't turned 22 years old yet. I was 21, but he had paid attention to, I guess, what I was doing. And I think Coach Leggett about fell over because he had recruited all these great players. And now here's a 21-year-old college graduate that's going to have a hand in their development. And Randy Mazey was the other coach at the time. And so I went back to Elon and said, thanks, but no thanks, moved to Clemson. And then that year it was Coach Wilhelm, Jack Leggett, Randy, and myself all in one office, like just one office with four desks. And I learned so much, obviously from Coach Wilhelm, but also from Jack and Randy. And I do want to say it's a travesty that Jack Leggett's still not coaching in our sport. And he still could be and should be. And we talk often, but we had a great season. We won the ACC tournament that year. And that was the rules then. The first year of volunteer coach, the volunteer coach wasn't allowed to dress for the road games. So I would pay my own way. If we had 42 people on a bus, I would pay 1/42nd of the cost of the bus. Jack Leggett was my roommate. I had to pay for half the room. And then we won the ACC tournament. We went to the regional in Knoxville. They had a young third base coach that made a lot of noise over in the third base box named Bill Mosiello. That ended up being, you know, my assistant at TCU. Kansas won that regional. And a couple weeks after that, I went to Tulane with Rick Jones. So, even though I was only at Clemson about 11 months, what an amazing place, and still consider that in the Carolinas home.
That's awesome. Hey, Slush, you're up. You get to fire away.
All right. Let me see here.
I'm off the hook, so can't wait for this.
Aaron Fitt.
Uh-oh.
Yes.
You got to pick one college pitcher to win Super Regional Final on the road. In your not current.
That's a good one there. That's a good one there.
That's a great question.
I mean, how can I bet against the great Michael Roth? That's my guy.
Oh, that's your guy.
Guts of a burglar. you can take Steven Strasburg. You can take, you know, David Price, all these, you know, Chris Sale. We've covered a lot of great, you know, great prospects come through the game. Jake Arrieta. Remember back in early in my career, guy that Coach Loss is familiar with, but Roth for my money is the most accomplished college pitcher. He's the Tom Brady of college baseball. He's the guy he's got the rings, performed, you know, at that level on the biggest stage that we had. And it's just, you know, thumb and lefty, man. I just absolutely love it. He's like, you know, like Preston Morrison. I mean, it just shows you that you can be a supreme winner. Preston Morrison, one of the great winners of college baseball of this century. And it's just, you know, low slot strike throwing competitor. And that's Roth from the other side. And it just, I love that about our sport. You know, it's fun to watch the huge prospects, but some of the most accomplished guys we have are built differently and they do it differently. And it's just really cool.
I still remember watching Preston Morrison at Arizona State. Runes, you might have been at this game, but Preston Morrison at Arizona State a few years ago threw like a two hitter or something like that. And like, it's, go ahead.
87 pitches in an hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah, it was awesome. We were out of there an hour and 40 minutes. And it's like, it's hilarious to sit back and watch those guys. Sometimes you're like, how in the world are they getting guys out like that? But yeah, I still remember that start.
That's a great answer. Big game Howie's a great answer. I'll tell you, we got to face Zito and Pryor when I was at ASU. But you know who my answer to this question would be? Would have been Kirk Sarlos. I mean, we faced him in a regional, and I thought we had a really good team, but I didn't feel that way 2.5 hours later. Like, Los cut us up. It was not good. Same thing. So, hey, Slush, let me ask you this question. So, the SEC West is obviously, you know, just a monster. We haven't seen a division like this in college baseball since the old six-pack days when, you know, the southern half of the Pac-12 was its own league, if you will. And so I'm almost going back to when you guys were at Tulane, and if you wanted to get to Omaha, you were going to have to get past LSU, which was arguably the best program in the country. And so it's almost like, I feel like that's the issue at A&M is, you know, you mentioned it, the program has been elite in a million different ways. It's been a top 15 program, but top 15 doesn't get you to Omaha when you're in the SEC West, because you got a bunch of top five programs in that league. So I'm curious if there's any takeaways you have from your Tulane days that you think apply to what you guys are going to try to get done in the SEC West.
Well, I think they come from both, because I felt like at TCU at the time, for us to get to Omaha, we were going to have to go through Texas. And, you know, we lost 2009, like I talked about, in the Super Regional. And then I remember just like, hey, you know, laying awake at night saying, if we're going to do this, we're going to have to do it the same way we did it at Tulane and going through the very best. And the difference here is that it's not just one school, you know, it's five or six other ones. So, you know, I think our job is just to, you know, as a university, you know, get the facility in the right spot. They've already made a commitment to our staff. And when I met with Ross, he asked me a question that I've never been asked before by an athletic director. And it was, what do you need to win? Period. Like, it wasn't, most times you go to when you talk with somebody about a job, they'll say, well, here's what we're capable of. Here's the constrictions we have. Can you win? And maybe we'll be willing over time to do this. When I met with those guys, it was like, what do you need to win? And there really hasn't been anything that we've came up with in terms of ideas. No one said no yet. We'll find out how this ballpark goes. But I think we just have to continue to grow the program and sign the best players and develop them. And that's that exact same thing is happening at all those other schools. And I'm not saying it wasn't happening here, and just put ourselves in those positions to where you can win 15, 16, 17 games. Right. So I haven't spent one day in this conference, so I have a lot of learning to do, but just from the outside looking in, if we can be successful in the non-conference, we get 500 or better in conference play, then that should get you hosting or in the conversation. And then it's just baseball. So it's certainly not going to be easy, but I'm very fortunate to be at a place that they want to do it. And that's, you know, 2/3 of the battle. So it's, you know, there's no preconceived notion that we're going to have something more or better than those schools. We just need to be as good and then let the baseball take care of itself.
Yeah, I guess from my perspective, you know, we talk to so many administrators, athletic directors, coaches, and things like that, and we get their take on kind of overarching college baseball items. But, you know, given your relationship with, you know, Jeremiah, TCU, Chris Del Conte, the University of Texas, and obviously now Ross Bjork. What is, and somebody who's dialed in all these college baseball legislative issues, what is the kind of the one thing that you as a coach, as you look at third assistants, scholarships, you know, things like that, what is the thing that maybe you feel the most confident that college baseball will have in the next 5, 6, 7 years? Is there something in particular you feel like, hey, we might actually have a chance at this thing at one of these different issues?
Well, I think the third coach is something that's real, but it's all going to be it's all going to follow whatever this conference restructuring happens. What I'm afraid of is some schools get those things and other schools don't. And, you know, the success of a SEC school could come at the detriment of, you know, a school, you know, a smaller school or a smaller conference. And as we all know, great baseball is played all over this country at a lot of various levels, you know, and not just Division I. So that's my fear. But I think if things continue to trend the way they're headed, then I think there will be an upper echelon of college baseball, whether they plays for the same championship or not, I don't know. But I can see them going, okay, you know, this name, image, and likeness thing at a place like Texas A&M, and you've already seen it in football, is very real. There are people associated with a place like Texas A&M that they have money and they want to spend it. They want to help win within the confines of the rules. And so that's not going to be the case. It just can't be the case at other places. And so it's not just going to be the scholarship. You know, the scholarship is going to be over. There's going to be money. I had an administrator tell me, he said, you're a year or two away from 11.7 not meaning anything. And that's mind-boggling and exciting at a place like this. But I love college baseball. I'm a college baseball fan, and I want to see everybody, you know, have the opportunity to compete. But that would be my biggest fear, is that it becomes a even more so have and have not. I think we got a train coming, so be ready.
We get the real experience today. We get the train and everything. That's fantastic. Where's the bubbles? Is anyone behind you going to start blowing some bubbles? We need that. Coach, here's one for you. I'm going to throw this kind of back at you a little bit.
We might have to wait.
Okay. It's loud out there.
That is authentic. I'm getting fired up.
I do love, though, that he actually looked around to see if he might have bubbles sitting around.
That's so good. Ball five. That's
ball
it.
Five. Are we clear? Are we good out there? All right.
There it is. You can see it in the background. That's awesome.
Look at that thing. Am I the only one that still thinks it's a little weird to see Schloss wearing a TAM on a shirt?
First time he's ever worn maroon. No, that's not right. The Fighting Christians were maroon, right, Schloss?
What's that?
Were the Fighting Christians maroon back in the day?
Fighting Christians maroon, yes.
It's coming full circle.
Coming full circle, yeah. Hold on. This is a long one.
Oh, boy. I love it.
I'm assuming you can cut this out.
No way we're cutting this out.
Yeah, this is great.
Authenticity, baby.
It's what Slosh said earlier is so true, right? Like, this is really authentic college baseball, you know, and again, no offense to the other places, which are amazing. Starkville, Fayetteville, all those places are awesome in their own ways. But College Station, that is a really cool old school college baseball crowd.
And
they say every great old ballpark was built next to a railroad, you know, because that's how they traveled back in the day and would literally pull I've seen pictures of Babe Ruth hopping off the train and in uniform and going right into the ballpark. So some awesome traditions here.
I love that venue. When we've done our rankings in the past for, you know, favorite, just our staff favorite places to go. I think just the combination of, you know, the double decker thing and the fact that it feels like the fans are right on top of the action and, you know, just as you've talked about all the traditions that they've built, I just think it's one of the coolest places we have in college baseball. And you're right. It's only going to get better as you guys continue to do some more stuff with your facilities, but boy, talk about having something that you can't really create that artificially. I mean, that's just something that's been organically built over the years, and that's pretty special to have that.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, I'm looking forward to my first game in Kyle Field. I think you can maybe see it back there over my shoulder. You definitely, I mean, I felt this at TCU as well, but you definitely, in a place when you have 70,000 students and the size of this place, you definitely feel a part of something incredibly unique. I met somebody yesterday that's fifth generation Aggie, like great grandfather, I mean, all the way down, and pretty unique to be very honored to be a part of it.
And I wanted to throw one back at you, cause I liked your question about, the best players, the best pitchers, you know, who you want in a big game. I want to know from your perspective, just, and I don't want you to think too hard about it. Just quick answer. Who were the toughest guys you faced in your career? Give me a pitcher. Give me a hitter.
Toughest pitcher. I mean, it's either Cole or Bauer. 2010. I felt like we could still be playing and we're not going to score. Probably Bauer a little more than Cole, because we did get, we got a couple decent swings on Garrett, but Trevor was, I mean, smothered us. Hitter. I'm going to go back to my assistant coach days, because I had to call the pitches to try and get this guy out. And it's Kevin Youkilis.
Like,
he stood right on top of the plate. You had to pitch him in to get him out, but he wasn't going to move. And those were the days of college baseball where getting hit was part of, like, you literally practiced it. I could name a ton of guys, but I mean, the first one that comes to mind since I had to call the pitches was Youkilis.
Bearcats. Love
it. That's a great answer. All right, Slosh, final question from you. We'll wrap this up after this one.
Okay. I'm going to go, I guess you're up.
Feels like I'm up.
Runes. I had two questions. I'll go with the MLB draft date. Good or bad for college baseball?
My answer really is it doesn't matter what we think, because MLB, you know, it went so well for them. You know, the ratings were great. I think they really enjoyed it. So I think my real answer is we just kind of have to swallow it at this point. But I do feel like, I think later was better, but that's too far. You know, I'm actually hoping to write a piece on what do we do about these, you know, the renewal deadline and the transfer portal date and the draft are kind of like three ships passing in the night, and we've got to get them aligned better. It sounds like you would know better than me, Slosh, but it sounds like the scholarship renewal is not as big of a factor, but the portal date has got to be after the draft. That doesn't make any sense, because, you know, a player's life changes so much after the draft, like whether they're going to play or not going to play, and for them to have to make that decision before the draft occurs seems so I don't know, like I don't know that right after Omaha would seem like ideal, or right before Omaha would seem ideal. I just think the biggest thing for us is we just don't want it on the day games are being played. Like, can we just please do Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday? But what's your take on that, Slosh?
Well, I think the scholarship renewal is that's a big, big issue. Because what it forces a coach to do is you have to have some super uncomfortable conversations with young men and about their future and scholarships before you even have all of the answers.
Yeah.
At least when the draft was in June, even though the signing deadline hadn't hit yet, you at least knew who had been drafted. So you call a guy in and say, listen, I'd really love to have you back, but I'm not sure we can afford this. We may be able to actually give you more after the draft, or we may be able to not give you anything. And it's just, everybody's up in the air, and you got to, and you know, like you said, you have to go in the portal to even have an option. I mean, I there are going to be waivers. We have two grad transfers coming here that went in the portal after the July 1st deadline because of the draft. And they were trying to figure it all out, and I'm assuming we'll get waivers for that. Certainly hoping. But you're right. We don't, you know, I don't know how much of a vote we're going to have. We're going to have to adjust. And whether that be, we did put in a waiver request this year to have the July 1st date moved back for baseball, and they wouldn't do it. You know, and the NCAA is very slow to make sports specific legislation on stuff like that. And that could be in this new, in this conference shift. Those are the kind of things that could very well change for some schools and not for the others.
Yep. Gosh, a lot of moving parts. I mean, it's all exciting, but man, there's a lot of moving parts.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I guess my other question for you, you guys, you know, the $20,000 free agent thing, you know, that has worked out beautifully for professional baseball. I'm not sure how good it's been for college baseball, because the players are literally pinned into, you either take this or you don't. I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah, it seems to me, Slash, like I thought there was going to be a cap for minor league rosters, and it just feels like everyone ignored it this year. Like, and I guess there's a lot of ghost spots on the injured reserve lists in the minor leagues, or, you know, I think I read a tweet where, you know, the Clearwater Phillies had 31 players on their injured list. And, you know, so obviously that's just an old school ghost list.
I texted Zach Humphries yesterday, our catcher from TCU, and said, "Hey man, how you doing? How's pro ball?" He said his response was, "It's not what I thought it was going to be, and it got very real yesterday when 9 guys got released." Mm. And he's just entered professional baseball. So, yeah, it's a very real business that, you know, if somebody wants to partake in that, which I know it's a dream for almost every player, you just have to understand what it is.
And I'll make a shortened version of my standard rant here. Look, it's just so short-sighted of Major League Baseball to, you know, slash so many job opportunities. I just don't think it's a good idea to limit the amount of job opportunities in your field. I mean, we've seen so many stories of development over the course of years and these guys grinding their way and becoming, you know, really good big league players. And I was, you know, I mean, there's so many examples, but I was going to like Justin Turner as an example of a guy that took a few years to figure it out. I mean, if you're just cutting that guy after a few weeks or after a year, you're not letting these guys have a chance to develop in your system. I mean, I don't think it's good for the players, but it's also, you know, from a lower level, I mean, you're kind of removing hope from the 15th round type talent. You know, it used to be, you could work hard in college baseball, you can get drafted, get your chance in pro ball, and then hope to work your way up. And now there's just so many fewer opportunities. And I don't understand the end game of this. I feel like we're just making baseball a less desirable career path is what we're doing.
Yeah. Gosh, so many moving parts to this whole thing. I feel like we've had so many changes all at once, and it's like just the law of unintended consequences compounding on top of itself. So, man, it's going to be fascinating. Hey, boys, why don't we wrap there? Slash, this was awesome. Oh, you are always a super fun conversation, and this one was, we could go for another 2 hours, clearly. So, but thanks for having us. Good luck in the new gig. You look great in maroon again. Well done. Good color for you.
All right.
Yeah,
I appreciate all you guys do for our sport, man. I mean, it's just the growth of college baseball during my time as a coach, and especially just the last 5 to 10 years. I mean, it can be directly attributed to the things you guys and KP are doing, and it's just awesome to be a part of it. So thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
I want to see you grow that beard out by opening day. Can make that happen?
I'm going to have to be clean shaven here shortly, but, you know, mix it up a little bit.
I like it.
Oh, that's awesome. Very good. All right, we'll wrap it there. Thanks to the listeners. We appreciate it. Thanks to Driveline, as always. And we will catch everyone next week. Have a good one, boys.